Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part one of episode number 121 of Mid 60 Music Podcast, the Millennial Throwback Machine. So first of all, I'd like to welcome all you to part one of episode number 121 of May 60 Music Podcast, the Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or in iHeartRadio, or in Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is, I'm just going to give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 25-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a huge 60 music fan slash expert slash nerd, and each week with this podcast, I take one song by one artist from the 60s and put the show in two parts. First part of the show, talk about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, and do my own personalities on the range of the song, which will include the chords, melody, and lyrics, and the second part of the show, dig deep into the history behind that track. In that part of the show, talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, who were the musicians in the track, whether it be the session musicians or band members themselves, the song history behind the songwriters who wrote the song, and the producer that produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, where that studio is located at, and the label the song was released on, and the history behind that record label, and the peak position the song made up originally in the Billboard Hot 100 charts when it first came out, and the year and month the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on this week's episode of the podcast, I wanted to actually kind of let you guys know a couple things. One kind of major thing I forgot to mention to you guys last week when I did the Knickerbockers and Lies, and I covered garage rock. One thing I forgot to say is that really the origins of punk rock, you know, all the major punk rock music that you know and love from the late 70s, early 80s, and even beyond, a lot of it stemmed from garage rock of the 60s. I mean, a lot of like the Sonics and the Kingsmen and the groups like that and the Trashmen, they're all the punk rock, the origins of that is within that raw, really balls the ball in your face punk, you know, garage rock, which came out in the early 60s. So the origins of punk rock, you can find that with garage rock. And also, I want to let you guys know something kind of important about how I do this podcast, because I think you guys should probably know exactly how I even do this podcast in the first place, and kind of just, you know, just a little full disclosure, because I'm not always forthcoming about exactly the process of how I even create this podcast in the first place. But it's totally related to this sort of full disclosure, just a little disclaimer, you know, for this podcast, you know, for those of you who may have never heard this before, but just to kind of let you know, for a very long time, before I did each episode of the podcast, I would always write a script, but I would always do a lot of research behind each band and artist I did each week and present to you guys some really cool behind the scenes rare information about these songs and artists that you might not be able to find that easily on the internet. And I've done a pretty good job of that. I got to be honest with you. I really have to pat myself on the back for, you know, providing this to you guys, you know, to people who obviously may or may not have heard this music before and people that might be around my age. So one thing I want to say is that as of episode 100, I stopped doing that. And the point I'm trying to make is that every single episode I've done on my podcast since episode 100 has been totally off the cuff. Meaning that I'm not going off a script. I'm going totally off of memory. So sometimes I have to look stuff up and, you know, so that way I can get my facts straight about certain things. But for the most part, I'm going off of memory because I have most of the stuff memorized and I can pull this information off of the top of my head. But sometimes it's difficult for me to remember a specific piece of information I learned about a band or artist a long time ago that I can't easily really find on the internet. So sometimes I go off of memory, and that's basically what I've been doing on this podcast since episode 100. And sometimes when that happens, I don't always get certain specific pieces of facts and information correct. And that's what happened last week when I did the Knickerbockers. Because I don't know if you guys remember this, but I said that I think that Jerry Cole was the additional guitar player on the song other than the band members themselves, that Jerry Fuller used as a studio musician. But I was actually wrong. I actually got him confused for another guy who actually played on some major hit songs for a band I will talk about at some point on this podcast called The Monkees. His name was Jerry McGee. He was the one who actually was the additional guitar player on Lies and played on all those really cool like lead guitar parts on that record. He was the guy who did that, not Jerry Cole. But of course, you know, Jerry Cole, Jerry McGee, they're almost the same name. So, you know, and also that piece of information right there is not that easy to find on the internet. I literally was going off of memory from me trying to remember that specific piece of information. So, you know, again, it's like I'm literally not writing a script for any of these episodes. It's all off the cuff, all coming from memory, you know. So if I get one or two facts incorrect, it's because my brain is working probably really, really fast at lightning speed. And sometimes I get names mixed up or places mixed up. I mean, for example, when I had Cat Hamilton on my podcast, I said that band, the Chartbusters who did that song, she's the one that also influenced that movie, That Thing You Do. I said that I think they were from Seattle, Washington. They're actually from Washington, D.C., but again, Seattle, Washington, the Washington State, Washington, D.C., there's the same the same name. So you can see, you know, and just by that alone, you can see how really difficult for it is sometimes for me to do this podcast, because sometimes, and like I said before, I'm going off of memory here. I'm not reading from a script. So sometimes I get little facts and information wrong. And, you know, and that's just, and here's another thing. To sort of drive this home for you guys, there's a show I listen to every Sunday night on Sirius XM radio and hosted by this guy named Lou Simon. Now, Lou Simon is a lot like me. He's very much a music historian. He knows so much about this music, and I've learned quite a lot from him, and I've kind of modeled this podcast after this 60s radio show that I used to listen to that he used to host called the 60s Satellite Survey, which is on Channel 6 on Sirius XM, which is appropriately called 60s on 6. I've kind of modeled this podcast after his radio show that I used to listen to every Saturday. I still listen to every Saturday, but there's a different host hosting it now. The catchphrase I say at the end of every episode of this podcast kind of was inspired by his catchphrase. I used to say it at the end of every single one of his shows that he used to do, his countdown shows, which was, please be nice to each other, will you? Well, I actually kind of, you know, you can see how that kind of influenced my podcast. But anyways, one catchphrase that he has on that his show that he does every Sunday night on The Diner on Sirius XM channel 106, one of his catchphrases he says at pretty much almost every show. I mean, he says it sometimes, but sometimes he doesn't say it. But anyways, the catchphrase he says, and I'm going to take this with me too when I do my podcast for now on, so I'm not really doing any scripts. And that catchphrase is, it is better to guess and be wrong than to look it up to be right. And that's honestly, that's the honest to God true. Sometimes, you know, when you're trying to remember specific facts and information, it's always better to guess and be wrong than to look it up to be right, because then you're not cheating, you know, and that's exactly what I've done in the past. But sometimes I look stuff up just to, you know, keep my facts straight, because like I said before, I'm not writing a script for the show anymore. But again, you know, that's a very important phrase to keep in mind for me and this podcast and for you guys too, because I feel like you guys really kind of need to know exactly how I even produce this podcast in the first place. Because sometimes when you listen to other podcasts, you don't know exactly how they're made. You know, it's just a lot of behind the scenes kind of things go into it. A lot of production is involved, but really it's just me and my microphone and just my insane brain where I remember all these different facts and figures about all these great 60s, all these great 60s songs that I grew up listening to. So, and again, it's like, you know, if I'm going off of memory, sometimes I don't always get things correct, but I feel like my brain is accurate 90% of the time. And maybe like, you know, maybe 10% of the time or even 5% of the time, it's there are some inaccuracies. But again, you know, again, like what Lou Simon says on his radio show every Sunday night on Sirius XM on The Diner, channel 106, it is better to guess to be wrong and then to look it up to be right. So I'm going to take that home with me. So remember that, guys. A lot of times I'm guessing and sometimes I'm wrong, but most of the time I'm right. But, you know, I mean, that's just the way things are with this podcast anyways. So I just wanted to, you know, let you know that. And also, I said that, you know, they reformed the Walker Brothers. That's all. I actually meant to say they reformed the Knickerbockers, but John Charles and Bo Charles, you know, they continued, you know, the band along with those additional members, like I said, at the end of last week's episode. So again, you know, it's better to guess to be wrong than look it up to be right. But it's very, again, like Walker, you know, the Walker Brothers, you know, the Knickerbockers, again, you know, there's two guys in the band, the Knickerbockers have a last name Walker. So again, it's easy to get things mixed up on this podcast, but that's why, you know, it's a real job for me to even do the show in the first place. So I just wanted to let you guys know that. So let's get on with this week's show. But moving on, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? Okay, so one thing that I have noticed on this podcast is that the last British Invasion band I did was back in August. And look, I got to be honest with you. The last British Invasion band I did was incredibly mainstream. I mean, these guys, I mean, everyone knows, you know, that one song that they did, House of the Rising Sun. I mean, it's just, it's kind of one of those songs that, you know, it really kind of appeals to the masses, and that's why you see so many people on YouTube, you know, trying to analyze a song and break it down, or just, you know, you see people reacting to videos of the Animals Performing House of the Rising Sun Ed Sullivan show. And it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, one thing I've kind of learned about me doing this podcast is that, and this is absolutely true, and this is something a lot of other people aren't even doing, and that the fact of the matter is that if you try to appeal to the masses, then people will not learn a single damn thing. And that is the truth. And because, look, I mean, I'm not trying to appeal to the masses on my podcast. I mean, every single artist and song I bring to the table each week isn't something that will appeal to the masses. It's always going to be something that not everyone is going to be familiar with, because that's how people are going to learn. People are going to learn about, you know, they're not going to learn from, you know, songs that everyone knows, you know. So that's, I really try hard not to appeal to the masses with my podcast, because I'm not trying to sell out. I'm not trying to be a people pleaser, you know, and I feel like that's what a lot of people do on YouTube. They try to sell out and they try to do things that everyone's familiar with already, you know, and I'm not trying to be like that, because I want you guys who, especially if you're a millennial, if you're a Gen Z guy or a girl listening to this podcast, you never heard this stuff before. I do not want to appeal to the masses, because you guys will not learn a single freaking thing if I try to appeal to the masses with my podcast. So that's basically why I kind of pick some of the more under the radar, pretty underrated, kind of obscure 60s bands. And this group is no exception. But there really were, you know, the thing is that this group was very, very talented. They were all really great musicians and great singers. And they recorded really great songs, and it's one of those things where it's like, these guys were technically part of the British Invasion, but they also, you know, it's up for debate as to whether or not they actually were, because a lot of historians think that, you know, unless the band was from Britain and, you know, they invaded the American charts between 1964 and 1965, then they're not part of the British Invasion. Well, let me put it to you this way. There were a lot of British bands that came onto the American charts after 1964 and 65, and they're very much a part of the British Invasion. And not every single band, you know, that invaded the charts that came from Britain was originally from Britain. But the point is that they recorded in Britain, and they released songs on British record labels. So therefore, these songs became huge in America. So in my world, you know, since I'm sort of creating my own sort of music history kind of landscape for myself, they are technically British Invasion bands, because they recorded in Britain, their songs got released on British record labels, and they got distributed by American labels, and they got released in America, and they became hits in America after 1964, so therefore they are considered part of the British Invasion. I know it's just, again, this stuff is very subjective. So that's kind of what history is. So, but again, it's like I'm kind of a young guy when it comes to this, but I feel like I have a pretty good, you know, understanding of stuff like this. But anyways, this group, you know, the reason why they're kind of unique is they fell under very specific genre of music, you know, in the 60s that, you know, isn't really associated with foreign groups. you know, it's where there, you know, when you think of like foreign groups in the 60s, specifically ones from Britain, you know, they're more like rock and roll, pop rock, you know, or soul. You know, they're not really, you don't think about them within this genre of music at all. But this group specifically, you know, they perfectly recreated and almost did their own version of this really classic, very sort of American homegrown genre of music that was hugely prevalent in the early 60s. And, you know, they came onto the scene and they brought some of those American, you know, essence of this genre of music, and they brought it, you know, they learned about it probably from listening to, you know, imports of these folk songs in their country, these, you know, imports from America, you know, these folk records that, and they probably loved these songs, and they decided they kind of wanted to create their own version of this and still keep a lot of the same elements that a lot of these, you know, other groups were doing in the early 60s. So anyways, so this group, you know, I'll go into more detail as to where they're from originally in next week's episode of this podcast, but this is probably the best song that they ever recorded, and it's a very well-written song, lots of cool chord changes in it, a lot of interesting sort of musical aspects to it that are kind of different, kind of unique, you know, I mean, even though they didn't invent this, but the fact that they were a group from another country and was able to perfectly capture the essence of those types of records with their particular sound, you know, for this, you know, particular sort of thing that they were producing and not in America, but in different country within itself, that's pretty impressive within itself. And again, they kind of took a very specific niche that no other British invasion bands were taking at that time. And they weren't even from Britain to begin with, but I'll go into that later in more detail in next week's episode of this podcast. But anyways, this song was recorded in November of 1964 and released in December of 1964. This group is called The Seekers, and the name of the song is called I'll Never Find Another You. Doesn't that, whenever you listen to that song, doesn't that kind of make you feel like you're at home? You're kind of in a safe, kind of a, you know, cuddly kind of a place where you just, you know, you're kind of free from the outside world. That's kind of what it reminds me of when I listen to that song. You know, it's the melody's beautiful and the chord changes are great, and it gives it kind of that home kind of a vibe to it. It doesn't feel like, you know, it's kind of good for right now because, you know, it feels kind of cuddly and kind of cute. And also, it's not too corny and schmaltzy enough for to the point where it's unlistenable. And trust me, I've heard a lot of 60s records like that. And it's just not one of those songs that kind of borders too much in the corny, schmaltz, kind of sappy kind of a vibe to it. It's still very much very beautiful and emotional, but not to the point where it's too corny and schmaltzy. You'd be like, oh, this, I can't listen to this. It doesn't really get to that. But let's talk about what makes a song so great musically and lyrically. But first, let's get into the song's music. Okay, so there are a lot of interesting things happening musically with this song. And one of the things I wanted to point out to you guys about this particular song is notice how when you listen to the song right from the first get-go, you notice that the chords change rather quickly. And I've talked about this in podcast episodes previously. You know, there's a lot of 60s songs where the chords, you know, they go by really, really quickly, and you don't always get the chance to really digest them or get to hear them very well. And this song is no exception to that. But I feel like with this particular genre of music the song falls in, that's kind of what you're used to. you're used to the chords, you know, going by really, really quick. Now, of course, with modern day versions of this specific genre of music, if you look back the past, I don't know, decade with groups like Mumford & Sons and, you know, Lumineers and other more modern examples of this genre of music, you'll notice that they kind of like to allow the chords to ring out for a lot longer. And that's kind of what we're used to in modern versions of this genre of music. But if you look back 50, 60 years, you'll notice that, you know, the chords changed really, really quickly. And this is a really good example of that. Because things, I mean, literally, it's just like you hear that one chord and then you immediately hear the four and the five. And then you're like, wow, this song really just, you know, it's hard to kind of. It's hard for your ears to kind of catch your breath and really digest each chord that is being played by the musicians in the song. Another thing that's kind of interesting to point out about this song is that, you know, it always kind of feels like they're gonna do a cliche chord progression, like they're gonna go into something cliche like, you know, 1-6-4-5 or 1-6-2-5, but then they always surprise you. There's always a surprising chord change that makes it sound different. The only cliche chord progression in this song is the 1-4-5, and you hear the 1-4-5 quite a lot in this song. It's very prevalent, but again, it's a quick 1-4-5. It's not like a Wild Thing 1-4-5 where you hear you hear each chord sort of being rung out appropriately for each bar. It's actually just like literally just half a bar each, and that's kind of what, but that's the only really cliche chord progression you hear in this song. I mean, you know, because there's always certain things that it sounds like it's gonna go to something cliche, but then it doesn't, you know, like in the bridge, right? Because you hear like the six, and then you hear the four, and then you actually hear the five and the four, and then back to the one, and then there's always certain things. This guy who wrote the song kind of threw you in a loop a lot of the times when you listen to the song, because, like, for example, like, you know, when in the A sections, right, where you hear like the one and the four, and then you hear a major two, and then you're back to the five, and you're like, oh, that's different. And then honestly, you also hear the 1-3-4-5, and that's a little different too. You know, and again, this particular genre of music from the 60s was really built and based off of triads, major and minor triads, and modal interchanges. Because this particular genre of music didn't particularly, you know, dig into much of the extended chords like the major sevens and minor sevens and, you know, certain things like that. They mainly stuck to triads. And you'll notice this with a lot of songs in this particular genre of music. And what genre of music I'm talking about? Well, it's folk music. Yeah. So this song falls under the very kind of interesting sort of niche genre that's always been kind of there. It's just something that kind of snuck into your subconsciousness every once in a while, but it's never really gone away. And that genre of music is folk music. And this song embodies that genre of music so much that it just, you know, as soon as you hear like the first couple, you know, seconds of that acoustic guitar, and you hear the tambourine, and then you hear like the acoustic guitar strums, and then you hear those really, really cool acoustic guitar lines being played on a 12-string acoustic guitar, and you also hear the upright bass, and then you hear those harmonies, and you're like, okay, this has to be a folk record, you know, because it has all the major ingredients to what we consider folk music even to this day. It's got the acoustic guitar, and it's got, you know, even I can even probably, there's probably even some mandolin in here too, but it's got the acoustic guitar, and it's got the acoustic upright bass, and it's got those really, really cool harmonies. And again, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's that specific, this song really does embody that. But again, the interesting thing about it is that it comes from a foreign country where you wouldn't expect folk music to even come out of, because folk is such an American thing, really. It really developed in America, and, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you wouldn't expect a foreign country to kind of develop this whole genre of music. But this particular song perfectly embodies the, you know, the folk music that came out in the early 60s with Peter, Paul, and Mary, and, you know, the Highwaymen and the Kingston Trio and all those really great college folk records that came out in the early 60s with the New Christy Minstrels and all that. And this is kind of, you know, a foreign country's take on that specific genre of music at a time when it really wasn't that hot. I mean, there weren't too many records at this particular time that were huge that were in this very specific genre of music, because a lot of it kind of fell out of style for the more the electric sort of pop rock band thing that the Beatles came out with in 1964, you know. But still, and the other thing that makes this song folk is listen to how you really don't hear one lead singer on this song. You know, one signature thing about folk music is that, you know, the one specific thing that kind of makes it distinct itself from other things is that long before, you know, we have, when you hear the phrase like gang folk pop vocal, right? You hear like, you know, different, you know, pop, mainstream pop producers today kind of just getting everyone together to say like one or two words, or just like, you know, but basically that sort of same idea that a lot of mainstream pop producers use today to record quote unquote gang vocals. Well, that's exactly what these folk singers did back in the 50s and 60s, specifically more in the 60s though. Because that's when folk music really took off. But yeah, I mean, this is a really good example of that, because listen, you're not just hearing one lead singer. You're not just hearing like the girl sing the song. You're hearing the whole group sing every inch, every lyric in the song from, you know, the very beginning to the very end. You hear the whole group singing the song, you know, and they're all reading from the same, probably the same piece of sheet music. And they're all reading literally they're singing the exact same lines together in unison. And at the same time, they're also creating their own harmony layers to go along with that. So that's actually really cool. You know, and that's something you don't really hear too much of today. But again, that was very much prevalent in, you know, folk music back then. Almost every single folk group did that. You know, there was always harmonies going on, and there was never one lead singer singing every single lead piece of lyric in the song. You always heard, you know, the entire group or one or three members singing the song together in unison, the main lead lyrics in the song for a lead top line melody for each song that they recorded. And this is a good example of that, because you hear like the whole group is singing together in unison. And this creates a very powerful kind of earthy kind of, you know, very down to earth kind of, you know, appeal to it. And that's what kind of makes it unique. And that's what kind of makes it folk music, along with a very sort of, you know, acoustic, you know, instruments. And the other thing interesting about the song is that notice how like those cool little, you know, 12 string guitar looks that the musicians in the song are playing. You know, they're playing, you know, 12 string guitar licks that you would hear not too long after the song was recorded and released, but with 12 string electric guitars and not 12 string acoustic guitars. So imagine like in this record kind of came at the crossroads between, you know, the development of folk music, you know, which is prevalent and really huge in the early 60s, and folk rock, which is the electric take of that same specific genre of music, just with, you know, plugged in electric instruments, electric bass and guitar and full band drums. And this record kind of came at the crossroads of those two specific developments of those two specific genres of music. And it's kind of interesting to hear those things sort of kind of a precursor to the folk rock that we all know and love by Bob Dylan, the Byrds. And I did a whole episode on that when I did the Byrds. And I also did that, talked about that when I did the We Five. So, you know, we'll kind of review some of that next week. But again, it's like this is kind of a foreign country's take on that, slightly different. I'll go in more into that in next week's episode of this podcast. But, you know, this is such a great song because it kind of makes you feel good. And again, full disclosure, it's in my favorite musical key, B flat major. That's probably the reason why I love this song so much, because it's in one of my favorite musical keys. And plus, the chord progressions are really cool because I hear that minor 3, minor 2. And I'm like, yep. Yeah, I like this song a lot. It uses some of my favorite chords. Even though I don't hear those major 7 and minor 7 chords, I still hear those minor 3 and minor 2 triads, you know, I think, wow, this is a really, really good song. And, you know, and the melody is really cool too, because, you know, it kind of moves really fast, and it almost has kind of a classical vibe to it. But again, I mean, another thing that's cool about the song is also, you know, the structure of it too, because we've talked about this before. This is another one of the songs that has an AABA song format, you know, and, you know, it's really in the AABA song format is actually really cool. Because, you know, you hear like the, and this is one of the songs where it's like, you hear like the song's hook at the end of each A section. And that was a typical thing that a lot of AABA songwriters did, is that a lot of times you'd hear the hook at the end of each A section. And then you have a little bridge, which is what they call a middle eight. And you know, again, it's like, you know, if you're someone around my age listening to this podcast, you might be a little foreign to this specific structure of, you know, music, because I'm sure like you've been born and raised on verse chorus, you know, and that's been something that's kind of driven into your head ever since you were a kid, because a lot of songs made within the last 20, 25 years were done literally in verse chorus, and that's kind of what we're used to. But AABA is something a little bit different that you might not be as familiar with unless you heard a lot of those Beatles songs growing up, because they, you know, basically adapted that whole format and wrote a bunch of really, you know, interesting songs using that same specific structure, which again dates back to like the 30s and 40s and Tin Pan Alley and the Great American Songbook, and the writers, you know, writing within that specific time frame. But again, it's kind of cool that this other songwriter who wasn't Lennon McCartney was also using it, and this was a pretty big hit for this group in 3 different countries, and I'll talk more about that in next week's episode of this podcast. But yeah, so that's definitely an interesting thing to note. And also, another cool thing about this song is not just the 12-string guitar solo in the middle, which is also really cool after the AABA section is done. Another thing that's really cool about it is there are specific parts in the song where you hear the lead singer's vocals come in, and then, you know, the other lead singers in the song just do ooh and ahs on top of her, and they drop out, and they don't necessarily sing those lyrics along with her. And that's kind of a cool little arrangement characteristic, kind of gives you a little bit of surprise with the familiarity of them kind of doing that gang vocal thing where they're literally singing every single piece of line of lead lyric together, and they're not like, and no one's really being isolated. And that's really cool. But yeah, I mean, again, it's like, this is very typical of folk music. And, you know, again, it's like, what makes it different from a lot of other stuff is you're not hearing electric guitar, you're not hearing electric bass or piano or drums, you're not hearing organ, and you're also not hearing sax or any sort of anything else, really, you know, no strings, not even really percussion. You're just hearing the bare bones of acoustic guitar and upright bass and maybe mandolin and possibly banjo. So, I mean, that's kind of what, if you look at the bare bones of the really sort of purest folk music that, you know, has been passed down from generation to generation in America, that's really what it is. It's really just acoustic guitar and upright bass and probably also banjo and mandolin. But again, this is, again, one of those genres of music that, you know, this wasn't recorded in America, but you can definitely hear the American influences with this particular song. Okay, so let's kind of get on to the song's lyrics now that I've kind of dived into the song's music. Okay, so full disclosure, with the lyrics for the song, look, it's been a long time since I've actually like been really attracted to a girl to the point where I feel like I absolutely need to have her in my life, and I'll never find anyone else who's exactly like her. And even though I felt this way about a woman recently, I mean, it's not like I. How do I describe this? It's not necessarily ideal, because she's married and she has a family. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. I mean, that whole feeling about having butterflies in your stomach and just, you know, absolutely needing to be with this person no matter what, and wherever they go, you go, and you can't live without them. it's something I haven't really experienced in a long time, or it's something I've never really, you know, because a lot of girls that I've met, you know, they just don't, I just don't wind up feeling like that about them, you know, at least in recent years. But, you know, this podcast isn't necessarily for me. It's for you guys, because you might, you know, if you're around my age and, you know, you meet someone like that. I definitely know people my age who are not, you know, not doing casual relationships, but are in actual, like, really solid, you know, romantic long-term relationships. And this song might be you, because I get that, you know, when you find that specific someone, it's like you'll never find anyone else who's exactly like them. And, you know, it's one of those songs that, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, once you meet them, you know, it feels like the lyric to the song, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, the person in the song literally found this person. And now it kind of feels like, please do not leave me, because I will not find anyone else who is exactly like you. And this song is, that's basically the message of the song. You know, it's like one of those things, you know, it's like if you leave me right now, I will be heartbroken and crushed, because I will not find anyone else who is like you. And, you know, sometimes I wish that a girl would feel that way about me. But again, you know, this podcast isn't necessarily about me. It's about you guys, because, you know, look, if I'm not the person to be like, oh, I can relate to this song, maybe you guys are, you know, so maybe this is the song that is totally for you, because let's just say you're in a long-term relationship for a really long time, and you're, you know, and you're about to get married, and this might be the song for you, because you might be like, fuck, you know, you cannot leave me, because I can't find anyone else who's exactly like you. And look, this isn't necessarily the best mentality to have when you're in relationships, because a lot of these things don't last forever. Things change, and then, you start becoming interested in other people, and then things kind of break up, you know. But again, it's that sort of, when you're in love with someone, you have this mentality of kind of this be all to end all kind of a thing, where it's like, it has to be this way or else it's never going to happen. And I haven't felt that way in a really long time. You know, so, but again, you know, if you're in love, I guarantee you, you kind of feel like that way too. It's like, you have to be with this person or else things are going to be awful. And it's like, again, it's a be all to end all kind of a thing. And sometimes it can mess with your mental health. Sometimes you're perfectly okay, because you've found happiness already and you'll be fine for the rest of your life. A lot of people are like that, you know? So, but again, this is one of those songs that kind of talks about that specific feeling. And again, it's pretty timeless, because again, you know, this could be something that could happen literally right now in 2020, despite the fact that the song is literally 56 years old. You know, so that's another thing to note about this song. And the other thing I want to talk with you guys about this song is, the interesting thing about the lyrics is that, listen to the poetic imagery in this song. You know, and this is again a folk music thing. You're not going to hear a whole lot of this in mainstream pop music. A lot of mainstream pop music is it's very matter of fact, very communicative, straightforward. And you're hearing a lot of this too, but you're also hearing some of the most beautiful, like, imagery and lyrics. I mean, I could search the whole world over until my life is through, but I'll never find another you. If they gave me a fortune, my pleasure would be small. I could lose it all tomorrow and never mind at all. But if I should lose your love, dear, I don't know what I would do. I know I'll never find another you. I mean, there's so many, like, you know, that within itself, if you don't know what that is lyrically, that is called a simile. Or actually, it's actually more of a metaphor. But I mean, simile is when you compare something, like if you use like or as, you know. But again, like, the metaphors in the song are just absolutely beautiful. Like, it's a long, long journey, so stay by my side. When you walk through the storm, you'll be my guy. Or, you know, when I walk through the storm, you'll be my guy. I mean, just those that imagery is just absolutely beautiful. And there's no other songs could do that kind of imagery better than folk songs, because there's so much of poetry happening in the lyrics of folk songs. It's not even funny. In fact, a lot of the lyrics to a lot of songs, you know, in folk music could basically could be standalone poetry without music in general. This could work as a standalone spoken word poetry piece and not a piece of music. But again, you hear a lot of those metaphors and similes going on with the lyrics to a lot of folk songs, and that's why these songs sound so good, because you're not going to hear that in a lot of pop music. Like the song I did last week, you're not hearing any like, you know, poetic imagery in that song. It's just a matter of fact, direct communication. You're talking to someone directly. You're not using any kind of, you know, metaphors or similes. You're not comparing anything. You're not trying to create some sort of bold statement. But that's what a lot of folk songs did back then. And a lot of writers like Simon and Garfunkel, Bob Dylan did that. And that's why a lot of those folk lyrics, a lot of the songs are kind of difficult to understand. You know, so again, it's one of those things where it's like, it's really cool to hear a lot of bits and pieces of poetry in folk songs, you know, or at least music in general, when a lot of times a lot of other genres of music like pop and R&B and soul, you know, and rock didn't always use those specific, they didn't always use imagery such as that. And they didn't always use metaphors and similes, because again, it was a totally different kind of music, you know. But again, those genres served well because they talked about very specific situations, and the way they those situations were communicated were just right for that specific genre of music. And again, for this particular thing with the folk music, you know, this is a really good example of that. So again, you know, beautiful, very relatable lyrics, and you know, very something could still happen today, 2020, and this could happen to you if you're a millennial, if you're someone around my age. You don't have to be a baby boomer to experience what's happening in the song lyrically, and the beautiful metaphors and similes and imagery, the sort of poetic sort of things that poets use all the time, and you know, for their poetry is winding up in lyrics to this song, which was a huge top 40 hit. You know, there's something to be said about a song like that having such a huge impact and it being such a huge hit at the time in the 60s. So that concludes part one of episode number 121 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you found out some really cool and interesting facts about this week's artist and song, and you're a millennial and you've never even heard of this group or this song before, and now you're kind of curious to learn more about them and you want to know more about this band, and you're kind of anxiously waiting for next week's episode where I'm going to talk about this particular group, because this group actually has connections to three very well-known specific entities as far as 60s music is concerned, you'll definitely know about. And even if you've never heard this group before, they definitely have connections to some of the most well-known 60s music entities you can possibly ever think of, including one of the greatest bands of all time. And if you want to, if you're curious about that, and you love this, and you fell in love with the song for me, you never heard this before, and you're millennial, please email me at samltwilliamicloud.com. Or you can also reach out to me on Instagram, iHeartOldies, and check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. Just a quick little announcement. Again, I have a two-song single coming out on January 8th, just in case you guys forgot. I still don't have the pre-save link set up yet, because what's happening now with that is I'm currently waiting for the artwork for it to be done for that single, because I did have an artwork set up, but that was originally going to be a one song single, but now it's going to be a two song single, so I'm going to need some different artwork for that. So I'm waiting for that to get done. As soon as that is done, I will start this pre-save campaign for that specific song, and you know, I'll basically get that all set up, and then you know, get my Spotify for Artists account all officially set up too. So that's going to be really cool. So, you know, again, it's like, I'm waiting for is that artwork to be done. As soon as that's done, I'll get you guys a pre-save link to that specific single, and I'll throw that in the description of this episode, this podcast, and next week's too. Like literally, as soon as I get that done, I'll include that in the description of this week's episode of this podcast and last week's too. But in the meantime, before that happens, you can check out the official Spotify and YouTube playlist for this podcast, where you can be able to find all the songs I've talked about on my show so far, including some of the ones I've mentioned in interview episodes. And those are really, really cool to check out, because then you can get an idea for the kind of music I talk about on my show to begin with. And if you're brand new to this podcast and you want to hear kind of the music I talk about my show on Ready, then you can check out those playlists and you'll get a pretty good idea for the kind of music I talk about on my show. So that way you can, you know, possibly give me some helpful suggestions on the kind of songs I can talk about next on my podcast that I haven't yet. And if you have any more of those ideas, you can send those to me at cmltwillieicloud.com, or you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. Also, another thing you can check out is my Redbubble merch store for this podcast. This includes the catchphrase, it includes a logo, which includes the catchphrase I say at the end of every episode and keep on chucking tie-dye font with any of my podcasts in the bottom, but attached to a bunch of really cool merch items. I'm still trying to see if I could get like a special holiday thing going on, or a special holiday discount for you guys. And again, like, I get it if you guys won't be able to purchase anything. I get it. It's a hard year for a lot of people. A lot of people are out of jobs because of COVID. So I'll understand if you guys won't be able to purchase anything. I know it's kind of hard because I might not be giving you guys incentive to purchase anything. So, but if you're ever so kind to support my podcast another way besides listening to it, then if you'd like to purchase something from my store, definitely email me at cmltwilliamicloud.com, or you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. But again, if you guys can't do it for whatever reason, you can't afford it, you guys are going through difficult times because of what's happening right now with COVID, don't worry about it. I totally get it. I totally understand that. But yeah, so that's really cool. And again, I got the two song single coming out. And as far as the book is concerned, I'm actually in the middle of doing some market research for another book, for another podcast that I've listened to last year, and it's kind of related to mine, a little bit different though, but still very much related. And I'm in the middle of reading his book right now, which is based off of his podcast I listened to last year. So kind of getting ideas for what I could do for my upcoming book that will have word transcriptions of this podcast. And again, I would love to ask you guys if you guys would be interested in buying that. But again, it feels like with this book that I just got, which is doing pretty well right now on Amazon, I feel like the potential is definitely there for this book for you guys to maybe be interested in getting it as well whenever it comes out. But again, I'll keep you guys posted as soon as I get some progress with that. But yeah, so again, January 8th, Turquoise Apricot, She Said No. That's the A-side, B-side single that's coming out. And also my new name, Sam L. Williams. Don't forget that. Sam L. Williams. That's my new stage name. It's not Samuel Williams. It's Sam L. Williams. And it's going to be kind of cool because that's actually kind of based off of my real name, which is Samuel L. Thomas Williams. Well, it's my dad was kind of thinking about Samuel Jackson when he named me, so you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. It's Sam L. Williams. So that's going to be really cool. So I can't wait for you guys to hear that song when it comes out. And again, as soon as I get the pre-save link set up, I will definitely throw that pre-save link in the description of this episode of this podcast and next week's episode too. Last week's episode and the week before that too, and this upcoming week as well. But anyway, so I'm Sam Williamson. Thank you guys again for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please keep things groovy.